Hey, there's an embarrassment to riches at the Caesars Powwow Engine Casino. You can bet on it.
You put an ad in my vision?
Yeah, Crazy Talk came up with that. He got idea from Dancers with Focus Groups.
Catapult the propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I am once again not Sharon Gilbert. I don't know. I'm Nicole still.
Well, yes, and you look good in this configuration.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Sharon 2.0.
Exactly. Macintosh version? No, I don't know.
No, Sharon is still on assignment somewhere in a hideout in central Missouri.
Yes, yeah.
Location undisclosed. We won't tell you where, but we can tell you that it rhymes with Hotel Sticks.
That
yes.
was pushing it.
Oh, now we have to destroy this MP3. Pretend you never heard it. Well, Sharon is still out of town, and so Nicole is going to fill in for tonight. We have good news. We have located a new location for the secret location of the bunker.
Yeah, a new
undisclosed and undisclosable location.
That rhymes with schmapartment.
Yes. Yes, it does.
There
so,
you go.
Anyway, so we've got that little chore taken care of. Now comes the fun part of actually deciding which books to take and which books to leave, which CDs to leave behind, and which other things. But we'll deal
how
with all
much
that.
Of it
and
I get
yes, and how much Nicole gets. She's already going through and putting mental tags on things around the bunker here. Well, we've got plenty to talk about tonight as we present to you a wrap up of the events of the week, and of course Nicole will bring her unique and amusing. Observations.
Amusing to say the least.
On the things happening in the world. Of course, the biggest news of the day was the event that we talked about just as we went to press last night, which was the arrest of 7 young men in Miami, Florida, who are accused with plotting to bring down the Sears Tower in Chicago. And if you've been paying attention today, as I asked you to do last night, you will have heard the phrase, say it together now, homegrown terrorist a number of times today. In fact, I heard it at the top and bottom of every hour as I listened to newscasts throughout the day.
Oh, dear.
Well, and again, we just want to stress that these guys, if they truly were planning to do something, we are glad that they were interdicted and stopped before they could do something to hurt innocent people.
Well, yeah.
But what we find interesting is the timing of this arrest of homegrown terrorists so quickly after the arrest of the 17 homegrown terrorists in Toronto, which followed on the heels of the, well, sort of arrest in London. Of course, it turned out that they were not, in fact, terrorists. It was all a horrible mistake. But the arrest of what appeared to be a group of homegrown terrorists in London.
As you can't see, our fingers are making lots of little quotey things.
Mm-hmm. So, as we predicted, that is a phrase that we're going to hear more of. And we shouldn't be too surprised by this because, frankly, it was essentially what we heard during the Bill Clinton administration when they were warning Americans to watch out for those wacko fundamentalist Christians who were going to create all kinds of, you know what, on January 1st of 2000 to ring in the millennium. They're going to try to bring on the apocalypse. Remember Project Megiddo? Well, the word that's coming from Miami, from a reporter for the Miami Herald, Manny Garcia, who was reported, who was interviewed rather by the BBC, is that her sources indicate that these guys who arrested Miami last night are wannabes. That these guys had, and in fact, I was listening to ABC News. The mainstream news was reporting today that these guys had no money, had no weapons, had no means of carrying anything out. So I don't think that Mayor Daley in Chicago is exaggerating when he says there was never any threat to the people of Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, again, these guys were stopped because clearly they were showing some intent, even if they wanted to be terrorists. They clearly needed to be corrected before they could actually do something. But our only point here is let's not get too carried away by the reports of the stunning success here, because these guys look to be just a bunch of punk kids, frankly.
Yeah, and I'm sure, I don't know if you remember from reading 1984, which I'm sure most of you, if you're listening to this, have probably read, and if you hadn't, you need to rush out and buy a copy right now, because that is one of the best books, and you'll make so many connections. But one of the things that really has been standing out to me most lately has been part in which the main character discovers that it seems like every other day, he starts noticing that every other day it seems like they're at war with someone else, and they're an ally with the other person that they were, you know, the other superpower they were just at war with. You know, it's like, well, we're doing this, and then it seems like they keep doing these little sort of, you know, things to keep the people appeased, if you kind of know what I mean. I know my thoughts are a little scattered right now, but...
No, I think you're making a good point. So... How do you see what parallel do you see with the way the news media portrays stories today, or the way the government releases information today?
Well, I just see stuff like this, these wannabe terrorists, and oh, oops, you know, there have been a lot of oopses, but every time all these people just get all riled up. See, we actually are doing something. You know, it's something like that. And I don't think it's worth getting that excited over. And what you see in 1984 is every time they say, oh, and we won a major battle today in the war against so-and-so, when just the past week they were at war with
the other country,
the people they were just at their allies with now. And they keep making up, and you find out, I mean, it's all a big lie, obviously. And that's what it kind of boils down to, is that there are a lot of these oopses kind of going on. And even if they aren't lies, it seems like there are a lot of things to just tide us over, keep our patriotism up, you know, so we don't just go, who wants to live in America?
Keep support against the outside enemy.
Exactly. And it's they just want to keep people liking America. And I don't know, maybe if it's not, I'm portraying it more cynically than I think I want to,
but it's a tactic that's been used throughout history.
Propaganda? No.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
The young men that we interviewed a couple of weeks back, well, a couple of months back, and we're going to interview again this weekend, in fact, Philip Collins and Paul Collins, wrote an excellent book. Their first book was called Mind is Blanking Out, and the book is somewhere on the bookshelf over there. But anyway, it was a book that dealt with how the state, how national governments can use terrorism to keep their populations, their people, in line. And they started with a very early example of using the Roman Empire.
Oh, yeah.
Most people aren't familiar with the details of the slave revolt that was led by Spartacus.
Spartacus.
Americans know of Spartacus from the commercial for, was it Pepsi or Burger King or whatever it was? Some people might have seen the movie starring Kirk Douglas.
Exactly.
But what happened was a gladiator, a slave named Spartacus, led a revolt of slaves in Rome. He did not want to attack Rome, but the Roman government, or at least a few very sharp individuals within the Roman government, figured out that if they portrayed Spartacus and his ragtag band of slaves as a major threat, then they could rally the Roman people and fire them up to give these guys unprecedented power, the kind of power that they were not supposed to have under the way the Republic of Rome was set up. And so they forced Spartacus and his slaves, who just wanted to get on board some ships and sail away. They just wanted to get away. They forced them, basically, by cutting off their routes of escape to the port, to turn back and attack Rome. They had no other place to go.
Exactly.
And so by creating that external threat, then the rulers of Rome were able to get the people to grant them extraordinary powers. Give up personal liberties and freedom to the government in exchange for protection. So that's a parallel that obviously George Orwell saw.
Exactly.
When he wrote 1984.
The man's a genius.
And if we can't see that same parallel taking place in the United States, then we're blind. Now, that doesn't mean that these guys in Miami weren't actually trying to do something. but it certainly does help make the case when a president comes to us and says, we need to look at all of your bank information. We need to see all of your telephone records. In fact, there was a story I mentioned last night that was reported on just this week, mm-hmm. that up in Bridgeton,
yeah.
by the airport,
oh, really?
There's an AT&T office up there,
yeah.
where there's a secret room. A secret room that you, to get into it, it's like high tech, you know, like in the movies where you have to go and you get your fingerprints scanned and then you have to have your retina scanned. And the only people allowed in there were certain high security clearance employees of AT&T and certain government employees. These were the internet connections up there in Bridgeton.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, AT&T, of course, used to be SBC, which yeah. used to be Southwestern Bell, which used to be headquartered right here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So some of their internet backbone stuff
is right here
in the St. Louis metro area and right up in Bridgeton, which is just up the road from us.
About, what, 15, 20 minutes?
About 20 minutes up, yeah.
That's a little frightening.
Right. There were guys who, for the last 4 years, have been, you know, had to have the retina scanned in order to go into this room. And what they did in there, nobody's quite sure, but intelligence experts say they're pretty sure it was NSA. Well, comes word today from the Washington Post that the Bush administration, citing the presidential declaration of emergency, see, there's that external threat again. We have an
exactly.
external threat, so we're under a state of emergency. Side note, the United States has been under a constant state of emergency since the bank holiday declared by FDR in 1933.
Well,
one emergency or another, we've had overlapping states of emergency ever since 1933.
That didn't surprise me.
Yeah. Because, again, when you've got justification, a state of emergency, you can claim the necessity to use these extraordinary powers in the executive office, which are not granted by the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the Bush administration has been tapping into a global database of confidential financial transactions for the last 5 years. So not only are they listening in to our telephone calls, checking our email and our internet usage, they've been looking in on all of our bank transfers. They've been using what is called the SWIFT system, which is something I'm a little bit familiar with because we use it at the office a lot. It's like a shorthand code that is used for wire transferring money from mm-hmm. one part of the globe to another. Now, the company that I'm leaving
yeah.
shortly does business overseas. And rather than, say, ship 20 tons of steel to somebody on the other side of the planet, unless we're very familiar with them and have a track record of doing business with them, we might suggest that they wire transfer funds to our bank first before the pipe leaves the company,
well,
our country.
Well, that makes sense, just in case.
It's
know.
Hard to collect from somebody in Malaysia.
Yeah.
Unless you have an office in Malaysia, which we don't. So what you do is you send them the SWIFT code for your bank. That stands for Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications, and it links together almost 8,000 banks around the world.
Wow.
Handles billions of transactions per year. This is what the president has been tapping into through the NSA. There is a bigger story here that we don't have time to get into tonight, and I didn't have the research facility here to really dig into it yet.
Yeah.
But there is a program, a computer software program that we've talked about before called PROMIS, PROMIS, which is a prosecutor's case management software.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been modified by a guy named Michael Reconosciuto, who's in prison now and probably will be until he dies because he quit playing ball. Anyway, he built into this system, which was stolen from its developers by the United States Department of Justice.
Isn't that ironic? That's irony at its finest.
The big irony sign on the wall is flashing right above the wall of paranoia.
Ironically, we don't have an irony sign.
Yes. Well, the software was modified to include backdoors in the software, which allowed the NSA to access any computer system that had this PROMIS software installed. Then the software was turned around and marketed to the intelligence agencies and financial institutions of the rest of the world. So the NSA has been able to tap into the intelligence agencies' computers in Russia, until they found out about it. And basically all over the world. It's, again, it's a very long, complicated story. I won't get into it, but it was the heart of the octopus, which was the name of the book Danny Casolaro, investigative reporter, was writing. He's the gentleman who was suicided in his hotel in West Virginia some years back. Yes, more quotey marks. So anyway, this is something that was in the news today. Tony Snow was defending it to the press. The president is making the case that the United States needs to have this power to spy on what all these banks are doing in order to fight the war on terror. Now, I almost laughed just before I went to pick you up tonight, Nicole, because I heard this story and heard them make that point right after the story about the seven kids in Miami that had been arrested. And they're saying, these guys, you know, this is a major success in the war on terror. We've arrested these young men who didn't have any money or any means. They didn't even have cameras to conduct surveillance. And then we turn around and we hear that the president should be allowed to let the NSA spy on banks because it's helping us to win the war on terror.
Well, obviously terrorists don't have money, so how is that going to help us?
Well, at least not these seven poor schmucks in Miami.
Well,
but anyway, it was just kind of
charts.
Right. It was just kind of funny to hear those two stories back to back.
That's very funny. You know, if they really want to monitor banks, you know, why can't they just monitor Swiss bank accounts? Because obviously that's where, you know, as you see in all the movies, that's where all the bad guys put all their money.
That's a very good point.
I mean, come on.
That or in the Cayman Islands, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Those are probably the only ones that they're not looking at because those are the ones.
Probably getting money from them.
Yes. You are wise beyond your years, my daughter, and I am very proud.
It hurts sometimes to be this wise, you know?
Because you go to school and your friends are like, what?
Friends, so did you see that new reality TV show on Fox? Did it have to do with sex? No. Then I didn't see it. No, I obviously did not. I was not watching it because it had to do with that. Or because it was Fox.
Well, moving on to North Korea, where the man with the tallest hair in the world, Kim Jong-il, is still shaking his little fists at us.
Right.
Interestingly enough, some very prominent Democrats are getting very, very forceful in their responses. I talked last night about the Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton, a guy named William Perry, who said that we should respond very forcefully. We should, in fact, take out the missile before they launch.
So you mentioned to me earlier.
Right. And now Walter Mondale, who was the vice president under Jimmy Carter, has come out and said we should consider force as an option for stopping North Korea.
This is very interesting.
It is very interesting because these are the fellows that you would expect to be the most critical of this administration's policy of using force. However, I can see their point. I mean, let's face it. If we were going to go in and justify invading Baghdad because Saddam Hussein had 25-year-old canisters of mustard gas, some of which came from the United States of America, by the way.
Yeah.
If that was our justification for attacking Baghdad and Iraq because we were afraid that he would attack us, then why haven't we used that same justification and the same rationale to go in and take out Kim Jong-il in Korea?
Swiss bank accounts?
Huh. Well, two words. No oil.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah, there's no oil in. Well, the other thing is this. That is a very sensitive spot in the world because it's very close to Russia and it's right on the Chinese border. And we fought a war there 50 years ago and the Chinese weren't real thrilled that we had Marines right on their border.
Yeah, that wouldn't make me very happy.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that they would be a whole lot happier with cruise missiles incoming.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there, but it is interesting now that there are some very prominent members of Democratic Party persuasion, who think that we should go in and take out this missile while it's on the launch pad.
Yeah.
I mean, former Secretary Perry said if we hit it with a cruise missile, because it's all fueled up and ready to go, it would just explode. It would burn up right there on the spot. And we wouldn't need to attack anything else in North Korea. Like, okay, you should not construe this attack as an attack. yeah.
Again, it hurts to be wise because you just start hitting your head against things when you, you look at this logic, and the logic is their intelligence is stupid. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I do worry, though, that if this missile truly has the range to strike the West Coast, and Kim Jong-il is crazy enough to launch the missile.
Perhaps not crazy, just serious. I mean, crazy is kind of a touchy term to use.
Well, okay.
Just serious.
I don't think... Yeah, and honestly, I'm not convinced that he does anything that China doesn't want him to do.
Yeah, it's kind of hard being that so... I've always kind of thought being so close to China, you know, that the countries around have to be influenced. I mean...
Well, he is...
Everybody in the world has got to be influenced.
Well, sure.
I mean, isn't that obvious?
but North Korea is a client state of China.
Well, yeah.
They prop up his country. Without aid from China, North Korea would collapse into anarchy. They're the only thing keeping him around. And they would only do that if he was serving a useful purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The useful purpose, one assumes, is that they can use him to do things that they don't want to get their hands dirty doing. Kind of the way Russia used to use the Bulgarians. Stuff that was really too even rough and tumble for the KGB would be dumped off on the Bulgarian intelligence agency.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
You know what their favorite animal must be then?
What's that?
The scapegoat.
The scapegoat. Nobody knows.
Exactly.
So, well, we'll see what happens there. There is an interesting story that we've not seen reported anywhere else, but the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, CBC, was reporting this afternoon that a report of a crashed U.S. military plane in North Korea yesterday, even though it's been denied by military officials in several countries, has really raised tensions in the area there.
So a U.S. military plane in North Korea crashed in North Korea.
That is the story.
You would assume that would be a no-fly zone considering they're threatening us with...
Well, that's been a real sore spot with Kim Jong-il. He has accused the U.S. of flying reconnaissance planes over its territory, and... In fact, we have.
Well, yeah, that.
But the, yeah, America, we've been flying spy planes over North Korea, and that's how we know what he's doing with that missile there. We can see it's on the launch pad. We can see that there are trucks loading it up with, you know, fuel, and they've got the windshields wiped clean, and, you know, it's all ready to go.
It's shiny, but, and new wheels. And
there was a report that a United States military aircraft crashed in North Korea Thursday. And even though it's been denied, it affected some of the financial markets over there. In fact, the Japanese yen fell very sharply against the U.S. dollar today. U.S. military spokesman in South Korea said they had not heard of a crash, which the defense ministry spokesman in South Korea and Japan repeated.
Interesting.
So we will see what comes of that. Again, it's just raising tensions in the area. It wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility. We have lost spy planes from time to time over other parts of the world. Yeah. The most famous, of course, was Gary Powers and his U-2 over Russia back in the was it 1960 or 61?
Somewhere around there. I was actually looking at that the other day.
Of course, we had a plane that was forced down by China just a couple of years ago. And, of course, it was returned to us after they'd stripped out all the electronics. But we will see what has happened here over North Korea as soon as more reports start to filter out. But some of the financial investors in that part of the world apparently sat up and took notice of it.
Interesting.
Things are not going as well in Iraq as we would like. And not because... I don't say that from the standpoint of hoping that the United States policies in Iraq are a great success for our sake, but for the people of Iraq. I believe that everybody has the right to live peaceably, to enjoy the liberties that we think that we have here in the United States, life, liberty, and the right to own private property. And
well, that's what Locke said.
Mm-hmm.
But that's... We have life, liberty, and
pursuit of happiness.
Pursuit of happiness. That's not land. we got into a discussion about that in history, and Of course, I ran with it the cynical way, and Mr. Nichols went, oh, I don't think it's as cynical as you paint it, Nicole. Please don't hit me, other students in the class. Yeah, but that's pretty much how our class went in history.
We'll talk a little bit more.
Mr. Nichols was fond of me.
Well, cool. And we'll talk a little bit more about private property in a few minutes. The president issued a Friday afternoon executive order regarding private property, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. But anyway, back to Iraq. Things there are really not going well. There was a state of emergency declared yesterday. Actually, earlier today, Friday, because of an outbreak of violence in the wake of the death of al-Zarqawi. Things are really bad there, even when you're inside or close to the green zone, which used to be the secure area in Baghdad. There were fights taking place on the streets of Baghdad between American forces, Iraqi security forces, and insurgents with rocket-propelled grenades, hand grenades, and rifles.
RPGs? That's heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
there was a story that came out a couple of weeks ago about four plane loads of AK-47s that were being shipped from Bosnia to Iraq. This was in 2004. Those AK-47s, which are automatic rifles, sort of like the de facto standard for armed insurgents worldwide.
Pretty much.
They were supposed to be shipped into Iraq for the use of the Iraqi security forces. It was being paid for by the U.S. Department of Defense. The Defense Department hired a guy to fly the planes to transport these weapons, a guy named Victor Bout. B-O-U-T. He is a world infamous gun runner, arms smuggler, arms merchant. And those four plane loads of AK-47s and and munitions disappeared. Just disappeared.
So, obviously, you know, with the information the United States has been collecting, they obviously must have known he was, you know.
That's exactly the thing. The State Department had specifically asked the Defense Department to quit using this guy. Quit using this guy to ship munitions and arms around the world. He's a dirty dealer. He's supplying rebels and armed terrorist groups around the world who are killing innocent people. And the State Department said, stop using this guy. But yet months later, they contracted him to fly these AK-47s to Iraq. The plane loads of guns have disappeared. And the fear is that those AK-47s that were supposed to arm the Iraqi security forces are now being aimed at American soldiers and British soldiers
and
other soldiers.
And innocence,
right. So the gun battles that were taking place on the streets of Baghdad Friday forced Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to order everyone off the streets with 2 hours' notice. In fact, the situation was so desperate that he made this proclamation while Friday prayers were still in progress.
Okay, that's a big deal.
That is a big deal. They don't take off Saturday and Sunday in Iraq like we do here in the United States. In the Muslim world, Friday is the holy day, and you go to mosque and you pray. That's what you do. And for the prime minister to say, I don't care if I'm interrupting Friday prayers, everybody home now. And you've got 2 hours to get there. Anyone caught on the streets after that will be treated as an enemy combatant.
That's that.
Dangerous stuff. Dangerous stuff. And it is sadly the way things are going there. A car bomb in Basra killed 5 people, wounded 18 on Friday. In the town of Habib, northeast of Baghdad, 10 worshippers were killed by a bomb in a mosque, 15 more wounded, 19 other deaths reported in Baghdad throughout the day Friday. Things are getting so bad there that when people discover a family member missing, they don't go to the police anymore because they know nothing's going to happen. They go to the morgue first.
Oh. This is...
Now, I'm not trying to paint this bad picture to slam our president or to slam our military because, as we've said many times, we are strong supporters of the United States military and the men and women who volunteer to serve this nation. And we've got many ancestors going all the way back to the Revolution, to the French and Indian War, even, Well, in fact, we even have one ancestor, Nicole, who got himself in trouble for joining a militia group that went and rousted the Nanticoke Indians back in Delaware, Virginia, in the 1690s, without the permission of the colonial government.
Off track.
So, yeah, that's right. Anyway, getting back to track here. So things are deteriorating, and I think if we try to blind ourselves to that because it doesn't fit with the image that we want, which is that we're winning, or as Sean Hannity would put it, the winds of freedom are blowing across the land and are blowing across the Middle East. Well,
you sound like I'm purging the world of the unclean.
Yeah, it does kind of sound that way.
That sounds weird.
Well, as I mentioned last night, things are at the point where a former high-ranking official in the State Department, Richard Armitage, told an Australian newspaper that he thinks the Iraqi government may just soon ask us to leave. And here's the worst story of all. Of course, there was a group of workers at a factory north of Baghdad, nearly 100, who were hijacked. I mean, the buses that take them back and forth to the factory and to their homes were hijacked at gunpoint, and no one's quite sure yet what has happened to them. But another group called the Mujahideen Shura Council has claimed that it's killed 81 workers who were working on the construction of a new American base. So you can blame that, if you like, on biased media, and there are many conservative commentators and pundits who will try to defend what's happening in Iraq by saying this is the media, it only reports bad news, it never reports the good things. However, what they are not reporting, and this is interesting, if the media truly is biased and against the president, that it's not getting a lot of attention. There was a cable marked sensitive. Cable is like a what they used to send before the fax machine was invented. A cable that was marked sensitive sent from the American embassy in Baghdad to the Department of State. The Washington Post managed to obtain a copy of this. The cable, according to the Post, outlines, and I quote, "The daily worsening conditions for those who live outside the heavily guarded international zone, harassment, threats, and the employees' constant fears that their neighbors will discover that they work for the U.S. government," end quote. The people who work at the embassy for the U.S. leave their cell phones at the embassy at night because if they were carrying a cell phone, it would give them away as an employee of the Americans, and they would be kidnapped and killed. Family members aren't even told.
Oh, dear.
It's really very distressing. And what makes this cable so important and why we should pay attention to it is that the name at the bottom of the cable is Khalilzad, as in Zalmay Khalilzad, the American ambassador to Iraq and prominent neocon, one of the guys who helped formulate this policy of going in and, well, first of all, taking Afghanistan for the pipeline rights. He was trying to help negotiate the pipeline deal for Unocal with the Taliban before 9/11. It is a very disturbing picture of what is going on inside Baghdad. And even though the Washington Post reported this on Sunday, we've not seen this get much attention elsewhere in the news for the entire week.
It's not going to.
And here it is Friday. I mean, if this had been really reported on in a big way over the weekend by any of the other talking heads in the news, we would have been talking about this on Monday. Yeah. I am going to upload a copy of the PDF file of this cable to our server, and I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes at PID Radio so you can read this for yourself. This is very disturbing, and again, I stress that the situation in Baghdad is so bad that the Americans working in the provisional government there can't leave the green zone without an armed escort, and even then that's not safe. And the Iraqis who work for the Americans in Baghdad have to keep it a secret from their friends and family because their lives are literally endangered if word gets out that they're working for the American government there.
That is...
This isn't quite the picture that we expected when we went in. We were told that the Iraqis would greet us as liberators, that we would be celebrated as conquering heroes, liberators who would free them from the oppression of the tyrant Saddam. And what is happening there, and you know, maybe, just maybe, part of the problem is that they look and see that the only part of Baghdad that has power 24 hours a day is that area of 104 acres in the bank of the Tigris River, where American contractors are building George W.'s palace, which is what they call it in Baghdad. It's that embassy that is 10 times larger than any other United States embassy anywhere in the world. Elsewhere in Baghdad, they can go for 22 hours a day without power. And I don't know about you, but here in St. Louis, where we get up to 90 or 95 degrees Fahrenheit regularly in July and August, going without power for air conditioning is more than an inconvenience. If you're sickly or elderly, it can be life-threatening.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And in Iraq, in Baghdad, it gets hotter than that, much hotter.
Yeah.
110, 115. So it is not too hard to understand why, when public services are of lower quality, they have degraded since Saddam was removed from power, why people might be getting a little testy with our young men and women. And again, we don't point a finger at the United States military. We say,
yeah,
shame on the men in government who place our soldiers in these circumstances.
And honestly, if I ever had a chance to give any one of them peace of my mind, that's... I have an uncle who I care very much about, my mom's brother, who, you know,
mm-hmm,
in the military, you know, fairly high up.
Mm-hmm.
He knows about things, you know. He'll probably never be allowed to tell. But to think that one day some person out there might put his life in danger in just for their own political, selfish, foolish games where they think they're the ones in control when they're obviously not.
Mm-hmm.
To think that someone could do that, it astounds. It blows my mind. And I can honestly say right now I'm nearly brought to tears when thinking of it. And it's not tears of sadness. Mm-hmm. I can tell you it's... And this is one of those things that makes me so incredibly angry that I am moved to fury. Just mm-hmm. I don't think it's too pretentious or pompous of me to say that it's not a righteous anger either, because it's something. This is something to be angry about, that people are putting innocents' lives at stake for their own selfish. They're human beings. They're not pawns.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're gonna treat them like that, then, well, do unto others as you wish to be treated, they don't see that they're being treated that way by powers that aren't of this world.
Well, that's exactly the point. It has always been so, and we've seen it from the very beginning of the Bible, where Nimrod, well, when Cain got angry and slew his brother Abel, and we saw it with Nimrod, who became a mighty hunter before the Lord, but extended dominion over his fellow men. And you only do that with threats and with violence.
Yeah.
It has been that way forever. And it's because, as Paul said, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. And that is the whole point of this program. You can't be somebody who can send your fellow countrymen's young men and women, sons and daughters, off to war without a second thought, unless you are being motivated by one of those powers or principalities. I firmly believe that.
Yep. It's ironic, but it's really not a satisfying irony from where we stand right now until you really start to think of it. Because really, they're using people as pawns, but they're just being used.
Yep.
And so, but it's really not as satisfying as it will be one day.
Well, I think in the book of Revelation, that's why you see the souls of those who've been martyred under the throne crying out for justice. How long, O Lord?
Mm-hmm.
You can understand why they would say that, why they would feel that way. But
yeah,
we are told in the Bible, not once but twice, because Paul quotes the Old Testament when
yes,
he writes, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay."
Exactly.
So we'll take comfort in that. And we'll move on, as long as we're talking about soldiers and things happening around the world. This is a story that kind of slips past on the radar, unless you step back and think about it for a minute. NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, has soldiers that are wargaming this week and through Wednesday of next week on the island of Cape Verde, or is it Verde?
Verde.
You're taking French class.
Verde.
Verde?
Verde,
okay.
Would be...
Cape Verde?
Spanish-ish, if it's...
Well,
Verde.
Anyway, Verde. V-E-R-D-E...
Well, because it's that area, it would be like mm-hmm, Francophone sort of area, so it'd be Verde.
Cape Verde? Okay.
I believe.
If it was in Illinois, it'd be Cape Verde.
And if it...
It'd be like Des Plaines.
Or Vardy Far. Oh, wait, that's...
That's St. Louis, yeah.
Italian sausage.
And moscacholi. We digress. You digress well, young one.
I learned from the best. Okay.
Keep on point, Derek. NATO has soldiers conducting military exercises on this island off the coast of Africa. 7,000 troops from Europe and North America. And, in fact, that's about 10% of the population of this island, I think. The exercise is called Steadfast Jaguar, and this is being billed as a crucial test for the new NATO Response Force. A spearhead unit, says the article, designed for rapid deployment around the world for missions ranging from humanitarian relief to lightning combat strikes.
Shooting
Let me repeat
or
that.
More shooting things.
Well, the picture that accompanies the article at CNN shows a Spanish soldier with a, looks like an M1 carbine, possibly. It's an automatic weapon, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely taking him with an automatic.
That's right. But let me repeat this. This is a spearhead unit designed for rapid deployment around the world. Now, maybe I'm not let me rephrase that. I am definitely not a military historian or student of tactics, but I always thought that NATO was a defense force for guarding Europe against outside invasion. I was not aware that NATO was training forces to invade other parts of the world with rapid deployment forces.
And, you know, the other thing that strikes me kind of odd is that phrase, humanitarian relief, from ranging from humanitarian relief to... I cannot speak. My apologies. You say it.
Oh, humanitarian relief?
Thank you. I couldn't say that. To lightning-fast combat strikes. Humanitarian relief. What, like the story behind Black Hawk Down?
Well, possibly.
We'll bomb you humanely.
Yes, it would be humane to put you out of your misery.
We're going to bomb you, but humanely. I promise. It'll be humane.
Well, here's...
We'll miss.
The other thing.
Humanely.
Here's the other thing that makes me wonder. Why are they conducting these exercises in Africa?
Because no one can see them. There really isn't that much activity going on there besides, you know, AIDS and really new diseases developing.
Well, I suppose, but why would they need to... Again, why would a military force devoted to... Why would a military force devoted to protecting Europe be concerned with conducting exercises in Africa?
Well, I mean, there was a phrase I saw in there in this particular thing that was it NATO's first war games in Africa have thousands of allied troops pounding pretend terrorist bases. And, you know, they...
Grappling with rioters and separating factions in a mock war over oil. That's the point. That's the key. There is a lot of oil in Western Africa.
Exactly.
Nigeria has had all kinds of problems lately with insurgents disrupting the flow of oil. Nigeria has huge reserves, and there are more reserves in other nations along the western coast. And it appears to me, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but it appears to me that this NATO force is simply the European Union plus the United States, of course, putting together a force. Well, gee, the European Union plus the United States, that's like the Bilderberg Group nations. Putting together a rapid deployment force to recolonize Africa. Africa has loads of natural resources.
Yeah.
Minerals.
Diamonds. Gold.
Yes.
They've got everything valuable. That's pretty much the last salvation for all valuable, natural valuables, really. Mm,
a lot of metals there that are difficult to find in other places. But the one thing...
elephants.
Yes, and elephants. The one thing they do have, though, which is problematic, is lots and lots of people who live there.
Yeah.
Now, seeing as how I am a citizen of the United States, an American, I must admit and recognize that we didn't let that stop us when our ancestors came to this country. The fact that there were thousands of people who already lived here and didn't want to leave.
Well, that didn't stop the, you know, the European, you know, imperialist movement from happening in Africa anyway. I mean, look
That's
at
right.
the, what was it, the Black Wars, where people in Tasmania, I believe.
Boer Wars?
No, there were a bunch of them. But
well,
there's
that,
one
yeah,
specifically
been...
called the Black Wars, where I think it was the people in Tasmania that were murdered.
Well, now Tasmania is Tasmania is off the south coast of Australia.
That was one of the wars that we studied, and it just stuck out in my mind just because it was that whole, you know,
Tanzania.
I'm just speaking not specifically from Africa. I mean, I'm speaking just it went along with that whole thing. It was the one that specifically stuck out in my mind because it was peoples who had already lived there.
Indigenous peoples trying to hang on to their...
Exactly.
Plans,
and it went along kind of with that whole... I don't know. That was the one that stuck out in my mind just because I remember reading a lot about it. We had to do a project on it. And I'm glad Mr. Nichols made us do these projects because there was some horrible stuff I read.
Well, there is. And there are horrible things in the history of the United States. The whole colonization of the Ohio River Valley. I mean, and again, our ancestors are right in the thick of that. One of our ancestors... Well, digressing.
Exactly.
But this appears to be, and unless I'm reading too much into this, the creation of a rapid strike force training in Africa, possibly for use in Africa.
I mean,
the European nations that comprise NATO are the same ones that colonized Africa and didn't leave until the 60s and 70s.
Exactly.
And it looks like we're getting ready to go back in and exercise our power again. But I should note that Paul Wolfowitz, who was now the head of the World Bank.
Wolfowitz.
Yeah, Wolfenson was the guy before him. You know, Wolfenson stepped down as head of the World Bank and Wolfowitz stepped in.
And then there's Wolf... Wait, no.
That's a,
I know.
He's on the same team, just different position. Wolfowitz made the recommendation that the United States government fund a UN military force to be stationed in Africa permanently. And we just need to keep our eyes on that because it's not the kind of thing they're going to put on page one.
Well, you know, the best way to get people used to the conditions is just stick them in there.
Mm-hmm. Talk about a couple of other news items here before we get up to the top of the hour. The Jack Abramoff scandal, I touched on that last night. Wanted to mention something that I kind of glossed over yesterday. Jack Abramoff is the lobbyist, of course, who was soliciting money from clients, primarily Indian tribes with casinos. And using his influence with primarily Republican lawmakers, but some Democrats as well, to get favors for his clients. Well, there were other guys who were hitting up Abramoff for money for their projects. And one of the guys who was soliciting money from Jack Abramoff and his clients, his Indian casino customers, was Ralph Reed. This is significant because Ralph Reed was formerly the director of the Christian Coalition. And he is currently the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor in the state of Georgia. Emails have come out now, and this has been reported, or rather released, in a report from a bipartisan Senate committee that Reed received $5.3 million from Jack Abramoff.
Big winner.
Yes. Now, at the risk of sounding cynical,
no.
I would say...
Dare you take that right.
That this...
You durst.
That this is a classic example of the love of money being the root of some evil.
I don't think that was too cynical, honestly.
This report was issued by the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, and it portrays Mr. Reed as a central figure in Jack Abramoff's lobbying operation. The reason Ralph Reed was getting money was because he was a good, clean-cut, he's a very well-spoken man, and he's got a very strong reputation, especially among Southern voters who tend to be very conservative, very high percentage of church-going folk down in Georgia, in the Southern states.
Yeah.
And he was being used to campaign against new casinos that would have competed with Jack Abramoff's casino clients. So what they were doing was giving money to Reed And he would go out and say, we don't need a new casino here. We got enough of this evil gambling already going on. And he would get people to vote down the proposals.
Wow.
To create new casinos that would have competed with the casinos owned by Jack Abramoff's clients.
Wow.
So, now...
That's crazy talk. No, it isn't. No, crazy talk. He's my brother. Yeah. Sorry, Simpsons quote.
Yeah, that's right. And my other brother dances with focus groups.
Very nice.
So, Abramoff is, of course, in trouble. The committee, the Senate committee, did not say, gave no indication that Mr. Reed is in any kind of, under any kind of criminal investigation. However... I don't think that this revelation that he took over $5 million from Jack Abramoff is going to play very well with the voters of Georgia. At least, I would hope not.
Yeah, I definitely. But then again, you did have when the whole Clinton scandal came out, there are still people going, well, it's okay.
He's done such a good job, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. Here's an interesting incident from Vancouver, and I think this is an interesting story because it illustrates... the way people might be treated in a world under the control of the United Nations.
Hmm.
Three youth delegates to the World Urban Forum were apparently dragged out of the Vancouver Trade and Convention Center Wednesday night because they were in possession of T-shirts that said, "Don't be a war toy." Hmm?
Uh-huh.
Yes, these three young ladies who were in their late teens were standing in line to get through a security checkpoint because they needed to use the restroom. Their bags were searched as part of this security check, and in their bags were these T-shirts that said, "Don't be a war toy."
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the young ladies refused to move until she got her T-shirt back. And the other two girls decided to support her. And so security guards responded by literally dragging them out of the convention center by their hair.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, how can this be in Canada, which is such a friendly place?
Free drugs for everyone.
Well, yeah. Now, I should say this. We do a lot of business with fellows up in Canada, especially Alberta and Ontario.
Well,
and,
I've heard they're friendly people up there.
And everyone I've talked to up in those areas is just very easy to get along with.
And the Blue Jays.
And the Toronto Blue Jays play up there, which I know is a big deal for you.
My mom.
Yeah. Well, the reason I mention this story is not because it's an isolated incident with one security guard who's got a little out of his, you know, out of his head. The girls were asked to give up their T-shirts because security, which was hired by the United Nations. I mean, this event is being sponsored by the United Nations, which means that the convention center was technically international grounds under UN control.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. These security people are from New York and from Nairobi, Kenya.
Hmm.
And they were asked to give up their T-shirts because they were considered objectionable material because they directly attacked a UN member state.
I don't see how that happens.
The spokesperson for the UN did not identify which member state it was that had been offended, but still.
Okay. Well, what I find interesting is the little blurb right there that says Michael Vaughn of the BC Civil Liberties Association says free speech is compromised when a T-shirt is considered a security threat. What, were they a bomb strapped to their T-shirts?
Yes, the T-shirt terrorists of Vancouver.
That just blows me away.
Well, see, here's the thing. The United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights says that the right of free speech should not be compromised unless it directly... opposes, unless it's in opposition to the goals and principles of the United Nations, which means you can say whatever you like, but you can't criticize us. And this is an example, I think, and again, I may be stretching to make a point here, but I do want to make the point that is in the UN Declaration of Human Rights. It's point 29.
Oh,
you could look it up. We're running short on time, but I do want to make a couple of other points here. We talked about property rights earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The president issued an executive order earlier today. Those are basically, they were intended to be a means by which the president could direct the implementation of laws of the land. You know, through basically it's how the executive branch executes the laws.
Right.
Well, his new executive order protecting the property rights of the American people essentially says that the federal government will limit the taking of private property to situations in which the taking for, is for public use with just compensation and for the purpose of benefiting the general public and not merely for the purpose of advancing the economic interest of private parties to be given ownership or use of the property taken. So they're trying to define, I think, for the Justice Department what the what eminent domain, how eminent domain can be used. Mm-hmm. We can't take your property unless it is for public use and not just for increasing the tax base. At least that's how it appears on the surface. I just want to make note of this because it's a Friday afternoon executive order, which means it's going to be totally lost by the time Monday morning rolls around. I'll put a link to the text of this, and I would appreciate your analysis of this executive order because I've not had the time to read through it, and frankly, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't really know what this executive order means. I really don't.
Yeah, so you lawyers out there will love you forever if you analyze this for us.
Yes, and our email address, if you'd like to send us your interpretation of this, is radio@peeringintodarkness.com. But again, it appears to be a statement by the president ordering the Department of Justice to say we are not going to allow the taking of private property for private developers, which is what happened in that Supreme Court case earlier this year.
Right.
I don't know how the president could just sign a law and make that happen. I would have thought that this is the kind of thing that would need to go through the Congress. So that's why I'm just a little puzzled by this. And again, because it came out on a Friday afternoon, I'm afraid that if we don't mention it and get people thinking about it, it's going to be lost by Monday morning. Finally, in the news from Idaho, strange goings-on, something of biblical proportions, and that's why we felt we needed to bring it up today on PID Radio. It's an invasion of crickets.
This is something. This picture is fantastic. This is as the.
That's not even the best one.
Oh, really?
Oh,
wow.
There were some other pictures from Channel 6 in that area that near Boise, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Boise, Idaho, where the crickets have covered the roadway. To the point where the road looks red. And
wow.
The danger is that when you get on top of these things and start squishing them with your tires, you start to...
Ew.
I don't know if the correct word is hydroplane or what would the word be for blood if you were, you know, blood you plane or corpo plane? Plasma plane? Yeah. You start the plasma plane on the crickets. And they had a couple of accidents on U.S. Highway 95. And what's interesting is that the location of this cricket infestation is the Jordan Valley. The Jordan Valley.
Is today just irony day, and did I miss the memo? Because seriously, this is, I mean, I love that quote they put under the title there, Motorists, Sea of Crickets, like scene from horror movie. This is something you'd see on Sci-Fi Channel on Bug Day.
It is. It is really.
I think I might have seen this movie.
and I cried
because it was terrible.
These Mormon crickets are red, and it's like a sea of red. A red sea in the Jordan Valley causing cars to... To a plasma plane out of control.
Of Mormon crickets?
Yes, that's what the breed. They're called Mormon crickets.
Oh, I'm telling you, this was a bad sci-fi movie with actors I've never heard of, and there was a car crash and an explosion for no reason and no plot. There is no plot here, and it's making me angry.
Well, we just mention it, though, because it's just another sign that, you know, infestations of locusts and crickets, whatever. It just one more sign that things can't be that far from just wrapping up when the skies roll up like a scroll. So anyway, we'll definitely put a link to that story so you can see the slideshow for yourself.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a slideshow?
A slideshow at the website.
Does the slideshow have a plot?
Better than some of the sci-fi original movies that have
That's
been
all
seen
I
lately.
To know.
Yes. Well, we're just about out of time. Nicole, you've done a wonderful job again, as usual.
I know. It amazes me. I amaze me.
Our email address for your comments and questions is radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Or you can just email me and tell me how amazing I am, really.
That's. We'll be sure to pass those on.
No, honestly, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
And the forum, peeringintodarkness.com/forum. Next week, we bring in Peter Lavenda. We will interview the author of Unholy Alliance about the occult Roots and Beliefs of the Nazi Party.
I like that name, Lavenda.
Yes, Peter Lavenda. Fascinating discussion we had, and we will talk about that next week. In the meanwhile, have a wonderful weekend, and we will look forward to seeing you again on Monday. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I don't know what happened. I'm still not sharing.
Thank you for listening to BIU Radio.
Cutting-edge news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.